Welcome to the Desert Dirt Biker Podcast with your hosts, Corndog and Eric. Welcome to the Desert Dirt Biker Podcast. This is episode 62, March 22nd, 22. And in our fashion, we are doing things a little bit different this week. I am actually up in Reno for a work conference, and of course, Eric is back home in studio, and we decided to do a little bit things different. So I'm starting this thing out alone, and since we were up here in the area, I figured I would reach out to a longtime friend, longtime ground shaker, Southern Nevada native, Las Vegas native, longtime Moran racer, ground shaker, Best in a Desert racer, score racer, and now he's up living in Reno, racing the Moran North Series and other things like Virginia City, the Virginia City Grand Prix. Anyway, I thought it would be cool to reach out, invite him up to my room. So we have him here sitting here, and well, he'll be showing up here in a little bit. Anyway, I figured I'd get this started going. We're going to get Eric on the phone, and we'll go from there. But let's go through a little things before this all happens. And anyways, the guest is Steve Tischner. His dad is in our ground shakers, has been way before me. And the guy is phenomenal. I'm sure we'll talk about him later. But yeah, Steve Tischner will be joining us live, and we'll get Eric on the phone. Let's talk about a few things. Rocky Mountain Fantasy. Holy cow. Supercross has been going crazy. Good to see Jason kind of healed up and back. Had a little rough go. Anyway, it's exciting nevertheless. How are you guys doing in your Rocky Mountain Fantasy? I know it's been tough. I'm not really moving. I'm sitting in ninth place. Eric, I think, moved up a spot from last week, 28th. But I think everybody in Rocky Mountain probably, or in the Fantasy League, probably picked Eli. Anyway, I think Eli's running away with it. We will see. A little bit of fight with the O'Neill Rider guys. That was pretty crazy. Little fight. It's all over social media, memes and everything. The one rider, Raper, Devin Raper, is kind of crazy. Actually grew up with his cousin in Pahrump, of no less. Anyway, small world. So we, Eric and a guest of ours, went out and started laying out the ground shakers courses last Saturday. Storm was rolling in, but we got some good stuff going on, and I believe Eric is really enjoying what we've laid out so far, and I am. So I think you guys are up for a good surprise. It's going to be great. Hope to see you guys all there. Ground Shakers race on April 23rd. Along with another Moran race, the Silver State Trails Blazers will be April 2nd in Panaca. Kind of doing a GP format. Looks fun. You guys got to go check that out. And then I just seen they released a change date for another Moran race, the Camp Valley Cowboys, which is the Pearsons up by Pearson's Ranch. If any of you guys know those Pearson guys, they have something in their water up there. It makes them all really fast. Anyway, they've changed their date. I think it's earlier than what it was on the schedule, but make sure you guys pay attention to that. It is May 7th up at Pearson's Ranch, or close to Pearson's Ranch. Awesome. Great riding up there. So hope to see you guys at those Moran races. The Nevada 200 Trail Ride, it's getting closer. April 8th, 9th, and 10th, we've been having some staff meetings, getting things all online, ranging things, so it's pretty exciting. They are filled out. I think it's the highest number of people they've ever had there, and so it's going to be fun. Going to be challenging, and as always, fun, fun, fun. Anyways, if you guys haven't been to the Nevada 200 Trail Ride, it's time. Make sure you get on that list next year, because it's just, it fills up fast, and it's amazing. What else do we have to talk about? I'm kind of in a blank because I don't have Eric sitting next to me, so it's kind of crazy. well, let me go see if Steve's close. I'm going to go downstairs from my hotel room and walk him up, and we'll sit here at the table and hear Steve's story. Kind of excited to hear about that. So we will be back. I will be getting Eric on the phone and sitting across from Steve Tischner. Be right back. All right, we're in studio, away from home. I am with Steve Tischner, and we have Eric on the phone, our co-host, as you guys all know.
So, hey, what's up, everybody?
So, Steve Tischner, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on your podcast. This is awesome.
Yeah, it's I've known Steven, and Eric's probably known Steven a long time, and kind of hooked up with him. I'm up here for work in Sparks, Carson City, Reno area, and hooked up with Steven. He lives up here, so we decided to do a podcast with Steven as a guest.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So I guess to get things rolling, Steve, let's hear who you are, where you're from, and how you got into dirt bikes.
Yeah, so I've been living up in Reno since 93, born and raised. I'm born and raised Nevadan. Grew up in Las Vegas, and that's where I kind of got my start in racing dirt bikes in the Southern Nevada Association, Desert Association down there. And when I was about 19, I moved up to Reno and continued on with them. I moved up to Reno for school.
And so like 3 years ago.
Yeah, just a few years
ago. Steve looks very young.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years. But yeah, I moved up here for school. I still remember those conversations with my dad, because I was 18, and like a lot of younger kids that are racing dirt bikes and going pretty fast, like, you know, you want to make a career out of that and go pro. And I remember sitting at the kitchen table with my dad and saying, well, yeah, you know, I'll go to school up at Reno, but, you know, I can come home and still race. And he stopped me and said, you know, look, I, you know, support you with what you want to do, but if you're going to go to school, you're going to go to school, and you're not going to be doing racing and schooling at the same time. And, you know, it was a little bit of tough love, but it's what I needed. So yeah, I left Vegas. At that point, I was just nonstop racing. That's all I wanted to do, was race my dirt bike. I was, you know, racing the local races down there, best in the desert, getting into some motocross, and I was doing good.
Before college?
I was all before college.
So go back a little bit. What was your first dirt bike?
First dirt bike was a Suzuki RM50.
And about what year was that, or what year was the bike?
The bike was probably a 70-something, probably a 78, 79. And I was about 5 years old. I was born in 75. So it was about 1980 when I first time getting my legs over a bike.
Nice. And then you've had the sickness ever since.
Yeah, I tell you what, boy, it was, backing up a little bit. So that was my first bike, was an RM50, then graduated up to a 60, and then on to the 80s. And, you know, I definitely wasn't like, oh, my first time on a bike, and, you know, I was up ripping and beating everybody. Like, I was a pretty slow novice for, you know, several years. And, you know, I still remember I was on my RM80. And it just clicked. I was at a race, and I was having a hard time getting up a hill. And, you know, I finally got up it, and, you know, I was behind a bit, and I think it just pissed me off. And so I wanted to catch back up. And, you know, I got down to the race. I'm like, you know, I didn't have a good finish. I'm like, you know, I rode like I practiced. And I remember my brother would always, we'd go out practicing a bunch, and he would always say, you know, why don't you race like you practice? You know, we go out, just practice riding, you keep up with me, and you go out to the races and you suck. And you know, it finally clicked. I think I finally listened to him. And the next race I went out there, and I think I won my first novice race on an 80, and then she moved up to amateur and then expert, and you know, we're scrapping for championships. And after the 80s, I graduated up to the 125s, and especially back then, you know, you go to races and there'd be 200, 300 riders, and not just, you know, just anybody. I mean, there were some really fast guys showing up there, and, you know, we were, you know, on our 125s getting top 10 overalls. And so cool. We were having good races and good battles with a lot of really good competitive people. But, you know, as I said, all good things need to come to an end. And that's when, about the time I was graduating high school, and it was that choice of, you know, which path you want to go in life. You know, do you want to go this route and try to be a professional dirt bike racer? You want to go to school? And, you know, my answer was, you know, C, all of the above, but you know, that was not one of the options. So I came up here to Reno. I went to school, and you know, all throughout school, I couldn't wait to get a dirt bike again. I just was just couldn't count up the days fast enough to graduate. And you know, the day finally came. I graduated and got my bachelor's and major in biology and a minor in chemistry.
So you're like a doctor or something, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I went back on, took like a year off, tried to figure things out, and went back to graduate school and got my PhD in biochemistry. And now I'm in a related field from that.
Nice.
So, so yeah, it was, but definitely the first 4 years of school undergraduate, I looked at bikes. I couldn't wait to get on a bike, but I didn't own a bike. Which was really, I think, probably the best thing for me. You know, listening back to my dad's advice was the best thing I could do, is just really focus on my school. And got back. The first thing I bought when I graduated was an RM250. It was myself and a couple guys up here in Reno that are also some local natives from the Vegas area, Paul Ziegler and Dennis Billingary. Mm-hmm. We all got a hookup on Suzuki RM250s. And we all got them, and that was kind of me getting reintroduced back into racing. So, and then it took on off and continued racing. I did start racing when I was back in graduate school, but you know, I was making a little bit of a stipend. I thought I was rich, but it was about as poor as you can imagine. But as long as I had enough money for entry fee to go to racing, like I was good.
Yeah. And did you ever move back to Vegas, or did you just stay up here?
You know, I stayed, you know, I was, I think like most people, you move away from home and you get a little homesick, and I couldn't wait to move back to Vegas. You know, the first year I got done with school, I went back down to Vegas. My brother was a carpenter, and, you know, I grew up working with him a bunch, and he just learned so much from that guy. And, you know, he always had a job for me when I came back. So came back for Vegas to Vegas and worked the first summer. And second summer, I still remember my parents called me up and said, "Hey, you know, it's getting close to summertime. You coming back down and going to work with your brother, and we'll see you." And I'm like, you know, I don't think so. I'm staying up here. You know, I got used to having, you know, a nice tempered summer. Winters were a little bit colder, but I got used to having snow. And, you know, it was the most beautiful weather. And I mean, I think one of the seasons I love most now, thanks to Reno, is the fall weather. See a little bit of leaf changing, and you know, that I have not left since. Had some opportunities to move other places. Recently I got an opportunity to move to Boston, and we were really excited about it. We went and checked it out, and you know, it just didn't suit the family, you know, for a lot of reasons. But you know, I'm sure a lot of it too is related to the dirt bikes and my community. Mm-hmm. And people I race with. It just couldn't be happier, and I really like it up here. My wife, she's a local Nevadan, born and raised in Reno. She went away to school for undergraduate. She's you know, as much as I was into dirt biking, she was into gymnastics and had a full ride scholarship to the University of Minnesota.
Wow.
And so she went there and had the best time in undergraduate. But when she got done, she was like, "I'm heading back to Reno." And she is me as well. Got her PhD, and we met in graduate school, and so from there we kind of just hit it off as friends, and then from there just kind of grew into where we are now. We have two kids.
Nice. Yeah,
awesome.
Talk about your dad a little bit. I know this is your podcast, but I've known the family for probably 20 years. Wish it was longer, but and they're ground shakers. I don't know if you're, I mean, you'll always be a ground shaker, but yeah. Are you in a club up here?
Yeah. So as I say, once you're a ground shaker, you're always a ground shaker. Right. I'm a lifelong member and proud to be a lifelong member of the ground shakers. But I also am in a couple of clubs up here, the Rimbenders MC and the Cheaters MC.
Okay.
We're kind of a spinoff to the Southern Nevada Moran.
Right.
So as I mentioned earlier, Paul Ziegler and Dennis, so they moved up here and really wanted to have the same kind of influence as Southern Nevada Moran did, bring it up here and adopt it up here to Northern Nevada, where we have the Northern Nevada Moran community up here.
Moran North.
Yes, exactly. So they really spearheaded it, but we all worked together to get that association started. And from there, from that hub of Moran, we spoke out and had the various clubs that are still part of Moran today. And a couple of our clubs that we've helped to homegrown here are the Rimbenders MC and the Cheaters MC. And, you know, it's like kind of the same mindset, really family-oriented type of racing. So it's great. You go out to the races and it's just just a good time together with everybody. And, but some, you know, just like in Southern Nevada, we got some awful fast racers up here too. So you get some great races, some great competitors and just some great racing in general.
Is the dirt any wetter up here than it is down south?
You know, fall time is good. We usually get some pretty epic racing in the fall time. And it's great. You know, I really enjoy that part. Summertime, we kind of try to take a break from the summertime and, you know, just it's hot and dusty. And, you know, so, you know, hey, why have a race when it's hot and dusty? You could be at the lake. And right. So we save the racing for, you know, the wintertime, the fall time and the springtime and then summertime, you know, at least for our racing up here. We try and keep it out of the summertime. But yeah, I've gotten going back to my dad a little bit. You know, he's a big influence of me. Get into racing. He got me my first bike, and I mean, he's just supported me. You know, I'm not gonna say he supported me just through school. He still supports me.
Yeah,
and that guy is just like someone I look up to, and I wish I'm in half as good a shape when I'm his age, and just as half the man he is when I'm his age. He's just been such a great example of who to be as a person, as a dirt bike racer. And, you know, he's just really literally supporting me every step of the way. It's like, I can't think of him enough.
Right. Yeah. I love your dad. He's a ground shaker 100%. He's been a ground shaker longer than I have. And he's one of our biggest workhorses. Let's see. He turns 80 here in a few weeks.
Yeah.
And he can outwork a 20-year-old. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. And I hope that I'm half the man he is when I'm his age, which is right around the corner. But anyway, that's my goal, to be like Mr. Doug Tishner. Anyway, so, known the family a long time and kind of honored that you're here and hearing your story. And anyways, been through a lot over the years with things.
Yeah.
I kind of wish you were still down there with us racing, but I guess I got to come up here and try some races up here.
Oh, you definitely got to hit some races up here. You know, I think we had kind of the same trend in racer turnout everywhere, you know, but you just looking at Southern Nevada, we had, you know, we first started up Northern Nevada Moran in about, it was about 95, about the same time Paul and Dennis opened up their shop up here, Reno Motorsports. And, you know, we, soon after that, they got Moran going and the clubs going. And, you know, the first couple of races, I mean, we'd have 200-300 riders easily.
Are they still active in the?
They still help out and they're still part of clubs. And they, you know, I think like all of us, you know, we'll kind of take a hiatus from Moran and let other people kind of get some new blood in there. And then, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, we need someone to do this and this. I'm like, all right, you know, put my hat in. You know, I was, I don't know how many years I've been on the board myself. I know Paul and Dennis have been on it, probably more than I have. But, you know, I've done everything from president to secretary to, you know, vice president to treasurer, you know, just kind of whatever you needed. I didn't really ever have a passion. Like, I want to be president. I want to be vice president. It was like, Steve, can you do this role? And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll be there, you know. So
kind of what happened when I became the ground shakers president.
Yeah.
19 years later, here I am.
Still doing it, still going strong, you know.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to get those two guys on episode. What do you think, Eric? And get the history of Moran North.
Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, no, it's really neat what you guys have done up there and brought the Moran style racing to the northern part of the state. It's been fun to see some of the North versus South over the years and stuff like that, but –
which we need to make happen again, I think.
Absolutely.
Some of the old timers are talking about it, and all these new guys, kids, girls coming up have no idea.
Yeah, they don't really know what it's about.
That was some of the funnest races.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's we've had several of them, and they've just kind of fizzled away. And you know, I think part of it was, you know, just, you know, when things kind of slowed down in the economy and people went from like just flourishing, you know, doing well and having fun and, you know, buying new toys. And then all of a sudden it was just like a snap of a finger. And then
right.
It was, things were different. And it was, you know, kind of like, okay, do I, you know, pay a mortgage or do I go, you know, go buy a dirt bike? And so, you know, you definitely saw a big reduction in people out at the races. And even when things started to turn around, I feel like it was so long that, you know, it was like people got a new things, you know, they're just like, you know what, I found other ways to spend my money. And for us that are the diehards, we were, you know, it's kind of sad to see that, you know, going from, you know, 200 to 300 riders at a race to, you know,
80.
Yeah. I just like, gosh, you know, it's like, is it even worth it? You know, it's like, we're barely even making by. And then not that I'd ever want to, you know, think anything to the pandemic, but you know, that seemed to really almost reinvigorate people wanting to go out and get outdoors and go camping and go racing. And we went from, you know, those, you know, 80s to low hundreds to back to 200, 300. I mean, our first race of the year, I think we had for both the minis and the big bikes up to 400 riders at a local race.
Wow. That's bigger than what we're doing down south.
It is so awesome to see. So, you know, I really like that. And they've really continue to see the numbers come up. You know, I think, again, it's a lot of things. So just people like kind of getting reinvigorated, doing stuff outdoors, you know, the Moran Association and the clubs just, you know, really trying to be dynamic and diversify the racing, the kind of racing we do, and just really being open to people to come out and race and not, you know, not to snub anybody just because it's their first time racing or to make them feel bad, just like make them feel welcome. I mean, those are the people that are really like, they're going to tell their buddies, hey, you need to come out and try this Moran racing. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of gets your feet wet and then go off and try doing some other more, maybe different type of racing and just, you know, spread out from there. But I really like the local events for how they welcome other riders, particularly in the off-road community, you know, and get people kind of introduced to what it's all about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
I know I bleed Moran. Been involved a long time.
Yeah, exactly. People like you and Eric and, you know, everyone like that really like puts their heart and soul into it and really like gives, you know, aren't expecting anything from it. Like, well, hey, can I get some gas money to go out here and mark course? It's like, no, when you need me there? You know,
that's, right.
Those are the kind of people that really make this sport so much fun.
And here your dad is still doing it. He's probably the longest one doing anything, I think.
I think he has to be. I mean, he just, you know, we were joking about it before he got on the podcast. And, you know, like Dave was saying, my dad's getting ready to celebrate his 80th birthday. And, you know, I was, you know, we were talking about it with family, like, oh, you know, maybe we should do a surprise. Maybe we should do this. And I'm like, you know, my dad is a social butterfly. Like if we try and pick a weekend here to do the party, I guarantee he's going to have something going on. And sure enough, you know, I said, so I'm going to let him know. And I let him know. And he said, that sounds great. So I talked to the immediate family and, you know, it was kind of a 90, you know, 90 some percent. We're like, yes, that day, that works good. I'm like, all right, you know, done. We're going to get the e-bites out. We're going to get it scheduled. It's going to be an awesome party. And then lo and behold, a week later, my dad calls me. He's like, hey, do you got a second? I'm like, yeah. You know, and sometimes my daddy, he knows my work schedule, so he usually call me early in the morning, but sometimes I get a little panic when he calls me early because I'm like, shit, did something really bad happen? Like, right, what's going right. on? I'm like, hey, is everything okay? And he's like, yeah. He's like, hey, you got a second? I'm like, yeah. He's like, hey, can you know, for the party? And I knew where he's going. I knew instantly. He's like, you got something else going on. And sure enough, he's like, well, you know, like someone reached out to me and wanted to see if I could come out and volunteer or help him out with the race. And I'm like, Dad, it's your birthday. You're turning 80, not me, not anyone else. we're going to do the day that you want to do. And, you know, of course, you start looking at his busy schedule and everyone else's. And we're stuck with the time. But, you know, he enjoys it. I mean, he just loves going out and working on those
things. He just helped with the Mint 400 a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and just had a really good time doing it. I mean, it's just it's a passion of his. I mean, just
absolutely
not doing it because anyone's making him, it's because he wants to. He likes to stay busy and active and
keeps you young.
It does. I mean, I tell you what, if you need an example of why you need to and stay in good shape.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the example. He doesn't do anything special. He doesn't have a special diet. He doesn't go to a gym. He just stays active. He stays busy. He's, you know, mentally, physically, and yeah, I tell you what, like I, you know, we were talking earlier, I, he's definitely an example of how I want to be when I, you know, get that age.
One of the neatest things I remember is, what was it? 8-10 years ago, you and your dad and your nephew, Nick, all teamed up for the Laughlin Best in the Desert race. And we made sure we were all out there. That was awesome to be there in the pits with you guys. That was pretty cool. Like three generations of Tishners racing on a team. That was cool.
Picture in my office, and every once in a while I look at that thing. I look about the same age. Thankfully, I was like, okay, I haven't aged too much from that. And my dad, he looks a little bit younger than my nephew, Nick. You know, he was still a teenager. I'm like, wow, like you've definitely grown up a lot since then. It's crazy. But no, that was really fun. It was pretty shortly after my brother passed away. And, we were just, it was definitely a hard time for the family when that happened. And, you know, just we wanted to, you know, be together as a family. Yeah. And, so I don't know which one of us really decided, like, kind of like, let's do this. One of us did. But I remember that day very vividly. You know, it was going back to Laughlin, which, I have a lot of great memories racing Laughlin, racing against some really fast guys. And I think I had some of my best races there, some of my best finishes. And so that place has always been near and dear to my heart. And so when I heard opportunity to go to Laughlin and race and race with my nephew and race with my dad, I'm like, oh yeah, we're doing this.
Yeah.
So
that was cool.
It was a lot of fun, and we finished, and I don't think I've ever seen my dad so nervous. You know, like your dad, like they don't let you know when they're you know, for the most part, if they're happy or sad or upset or scared, but he was nervous. He literally told me, he was like, what the hell am I thinking doing this? Like, this is
and how old was he when he did that? He was in his 70s, right?
Oh yeah, he was in his 70s. Yeah. And he was just like, he was beside himself. Like, why did I do this? And you know, part of me was like, you know, hey dad, you don't got to do this. But I'm like, no, you do. Like, you're going to do this. You got this. So, you know, he got put on his gear and put on his helmet, and he took off and he did his lap, and he has so much fun. He was so happy. Yeah. That he did it, and
he came back a different person than when he left.
Yes,
on that loop.
Yeah, you talk about the therapy that dirt bikes gives you. Ooh. You know, that was just I tell you what, it really was. You know, I mean, there was a lot of days of just recovering from my brother's loss, but you know, that was definitely one step of a time, and that was definitely a positive step of just like remembering what life is all about and having fun and enjoying life, and you know, just going back to the community of racing and really what it does for everybody. It just I can't think of it. Yeah. Think of it enough.
Plus, you wanted to go back there to get the cactus. I remember digging cactus out of you for a while.
I did. Yeah. You know, every Laughlin race, I don't care how good of a race I have, there's at least one or two needles that gets impaled. I think everyone can probably say that. And that particular race, yeah, I remember Dave was over there with needle nose. I hit one just right, and I remember I was one of those cactus that came up and just, it saw me and it salivated. And
he didn't stop, and it was like in his armpit, and he raced, and then one end of it just rubbed his armpit raw or something.
Awful.
Yeah. And the worst I've ever seen is you, Eric, with what was that not too long ago? Your arms were scarred.
Yeah. My whole left arm was covered in Choya.
Yeah. Yours is the worst I've ever seen, Eric. I mean, I didn't see it at the race, but when you came home for weeks.
Yeah, it was bad.
Choya. Gotta love him.
You gotta love him, man. It's probably, you know, when you go to Laughlin, like just expect you're gonna be pulling some cactus needle out of you. It's gonna happen.
Yeah, that time was a night race in Searchlight.
Oh yeah. Which isn't too far away.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
But. Wow. Huh. Well, what else have you raced, Steven? Steven? You called me Dave, so I can call you Steven.
Yeah, exactly. You can.
Nobody knows who Dave is. It's Corn Dog. that shows the history. Steve's known me probably longer than I was Corn Dog. It's been a long time. Anyway, so talking of Best in Desert, what's your career there?
Yeah, so I, you know, again, going back in history, I started off in Best in the Desert when, you know, it was dirt bikes only. You know, that was all we knew. And, you know, similar to what we were talking about with just Southern Nevada, Northern Nevada, you know, the racer turnout, you know, it was huge turnouts. And I remember talking to my dad about that, and Casey Folks, who founded Best in the Desert. I remember him talking. Well, my dad told me about this, you know, the memory of Casey telling my dad about, hey, you know, I'm going to start this new association, Best in the Desert. And we're going to do all these, you know, professional grade races, and we're going to do all this, you know, really cool stuff. And he mentioned something about, you know, the price of it. And my dad just looked at him like he was an alien, like, you're going to charge what? And I don't even know what the price was back then, but it was just astronomically more than what we would ever think about doing at a local race. And Casey said, they'll come. They will come. And you talk about a smart man, Casey Folks.
Look at it now.
He had it figured out. He figured out the equation much early on, and it worked. I mean, I remember, you know, going out to some of the first few races out there, and I you know, going into the riders meeting room the night before, and it, you know, just the amount of people. And this was, again, only dirt bikers. We're not talking about when it was, you know, a combination, and how it is now with trophy trucks and side by sides and all the other utility vehicles that are racing. This was dirt bikes only, and it was just like, you know, a standing room only of people in there. So it really just was a testament to the quality races he was putting on. And so that's kind of where I got my taste of, you know, kind of first, you know, big time racing. And my first ever race was Gold Strike, Best in the Desert Gold Strike. I forget what it was, a Gold Strike 100 or, you know, something like that. Right. But
the Gold Strike is the one that was out in Gene, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't know if it's still anymore. It was the Gold Strike Hotel that was out there.
Yeah. They took that down.
Yeah. It was across the street from Whiskey Pete's.
No. In Gene, Whiskey Pete's is Prim.
Yeah. So maybe it was out of Prim.
And it's Terrible Herbs now.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was then.
Yeah. It was somewhere out in that area that they had it. You're right. But it was Gold Strike that hosted it, I believe, or maybe it was Whiskey Pete's. It was one of those places out there.
I think they both did over time.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was my first race. I was 13 years old. You know, this plaque at the riders meeting. I was so cool. It was just, you know, this little kid, 13 year old, and getting to go up there and get this award for youngest rider to ever race the Best in the Desert race at 13 years old.
Wow.
And
that's cool.
You know, it was like, you know, I look at my son now who's 12, and I'm like, there's not a chance in hell I would let you go out and race or something like that. Are you kidding me? You know, but you know, I just said it was what we did and went out there, and I was so excited race day. And I was racing, my dad was racing, my brother was racing, got off to a good start. And I was, you know, racing like the 125 sportsman class, and was doing good. And in a sand wash, came around a corner, hit a rock, laid the bike over and broke the clutch case. And oil came out, and that was it. And I remember my brother, he was already ahead of me. He was, you know, much faster. And then not too long, my dad comes by, and he's racing, and he just stops for a second. I could tell he was irritated, and he just looked at me, and I was like, Dad, you know, I started trying to explain all this stuff. And he's just like, meow. It's like, yep, you broke the bike. Good job. Just wait here, and then we'll come get you picked up later. And he took off and finished his race. So yeah, my first ever, you know, big bike, you know, big race wasn't as good as I wanted it to be, at least from finishing or of course winning or anything like that. But it was a really neat experience. And from there, I kept working at it. You know, just like we were talking about earlier about having that bug to race. It's like, I want to get better. I want to get faster. You know, about when I was 10 or 11 years old, my parents moved out to Northwest Las Vegas, and there was nothing but dirt roads and cacti and sagebrush. Yeah, not anymore. Now there's a high school around there and convenience stores and
a freeway.
Yeah, it's it's a different life up there now. But when I first moved up there, there was nothing to do except chase lizards and ride your dirt bike. And so I was out on my dirt bike every single day riding, and it was the best thing that I could ever hope for, just getting out there, getting to ride and ride and ride. And it really started to show in results going out to racing and just getting better and better. And as you know, as you go out to a race and you win a race, you want to win another race. Or if you get a second place, you want to get a first place. So that bug really was just made me want to entice me to do more and more racing, whether it was in Best in the Desert or in the local races. It just was something I was really wanting to do and wanting to get better at.
That's awesome. Yeah, we have a sickness for sure. A good sickness.
A good sickness, yes.
Steven.
Yes.
So how old are you now? And at what point did you feel like you were at, say, the top of your game, or like, you know, at your best?
Yeah, top of my game. So, you know, kind of like I mentioned earlier, where, you know, I didn't start off like the best. Like, I wasn't like, oh, who's this young prodigy that's coming out there? It took me a while. And I really feel like I was catching my strides when I was a teenager. You know, I was racing at a professional level in the 125 class, and winning a few hundred bucks here and there, and it was cool. And I thought maybe that was my top of my game. And then I had to take a pause and go to school. And then I came back and I was racing a little bit part-time here and there. And I would say, honestly, Eric, it was not when I was a teenager. It wasn't when I was in my 20s, but honestly, in my late 30s, mid to late 30s is where I was really, it was clicking. Where I felt really comfortable on my bike. And I was 38 and I won my first overall championship up here in the Northern Nevada series. And so the overall championship, I think it's kind of similar to your guys' AA championship, where it's the pro class, kind of the same thing. It's a overall championship. So you're racing against every single person out there. So it's not a class per se, it's just basically your overall finish. So if you get a first overall, you get 30 points. If you get second overall, 25 points. So it's kind of more of a AMA style points setup, as opposed to where it's a class championship, where you get a much higher number of points. So set up very differently, but it's purely based on your overall finishes. Doesn't matter what you finish in your class. You could finish first in your class, but 25th overall, and you're going to get 0 points for the overall. So you have to not only be consistent, because you have to make it to every single race, but you got to be there to win every single one. I won my first overall championship when I was I think 38, and then I won my second overall championship in my 40s. Nice. So I felt like I was still making strides in my late 30s, my early 40s. I still feel like I can go fast now. I definitely, I think about it, of course, and, with kids and all that stuff and career, you got to definitely balance it. But I think that's part of the thing that makes, a good rider is recognizing those balances. You cannot go out and race a dirt bike and just hold it wide open and expect it to go well. You're gonna suffer the consequences. So I think having that in the back of your mind of knowing, okay, here's a time where I can really hang it out, and here's some times where I need to slow it down a gear and just get to those areas. And it paid off for me. And so I feel like it took a little more time, but later on in life is where I really felt like I was kind of my best years of racing dirt bikes.
Nice.
Yeah. So I asked that question because I have a similar, story myself with just, not really developing and getting to where I felt like I was riding, smart enough and well enough to start winning and stuff, until later in my years. And I mean, I didn't win my first expert championship till I was in my 30s. And then, we didn't really start winning until, mid 30s. I'm 39 now, but I'm riding as good now as I ever have. And it's, I look back on everything, and when I was 25, 24, I was riding fast, but I didn't have the knowledge that I have now and the experience of, like you said, when to go fast, when to check up and get through a section, and just, bike setup, all the little things that everything adds up, right? I mean, every little thing matters. It's crazy. But, you know, I've talked about in the past, we won the expert class in the Silver State 300 by, I think it was 2.5 seconds or something like that, second and a half.
Wow.
Anyway, so just like it comes down to, you know, the smallest details and the smallest things. But my point with that is just, you know, it's not too late to go learn and grow and develop and enjoy riding bikes. But yeah, I just was curious your experience, because I kind of felt the same with, you know, that's the way my experience has gone, is just gotten faster with age. But
yeah, and it's, you know, it's really fun still being able to push yourself. And I tell you what, I think being a dirt bike racer is, you know, it's one of the best, you know, not only, you know, physically speaking, I mean, you have to be in good shape. And I think that's another thing too, that's where I see a lot of people have kind of a similar stories, like you and I were talking about, Eric, where you're a bit later on in life. And I think that's kind of more of the norm now, where, you know, people recognize, like, you know, staying in good shape is, you know, it's no longer like, oh, you hit your 30s and, you know, you can just kind of, you know, retire, sit on the couch and, you know, gain 30 pounds and, you know, just have a bad diet. You know, it's, people really recognize now, like, no, you can still be in really good shape in your 30s and your 40s and your 50s and so on, you know? So I like that. I think it's a very positive thing, of course. And, you know, it's fun pushing yourself, you know, to go out to races and see how you're going to do. You know, of course you want to, you know, get done at the end of the race and be healthy and you know, be able to drive home on your own will. But you know, it's really fun to go out there and push, and just, you know, especially when you go out to a race, you know, and it's like, gosh, I haven't been able to ride enough, and you know, I'm getting old, and these younger kids, and you go out there to a race and you're still right in the thick of stuff. It's just like, man, it just rejuvenates you. Like, you realize, like, you know what, I'm still alive and I'm still having fun and I can still go out there and be competitive. And I love that feeling. And I mean,
absolutely,
about work, you know, it's like you kind of have, you can get like work can get you down, and just like, you know, you feel like you're getting this rut of like, okay, you know, I go into work and I do my thing, and then I go home and I, you know, I got to go pick up kids from school and take them to the gym. And then, you know, it's just kind of, you know, hit reset for the next day. And, but then you go out to these races and you're just like, it like totally resets yourself to where it's like, you know what, this is why I go to work, and this is why we do the stuff we do, you know. So when you come out and you can really just enjoy yourself and really push yourself to levels that you don't always know you can do. But you go out there and you compete and you do well. And it really, I think, is one of the best things for you.
Heck yeah. Absolutely. I
totally agree.
So you've done Moran North, Besson Desert. You've done Score, right? Baja?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Baja. It's on my bucket list. I've never been down there, even to go pit. Eric will never take me.
That's not true. I invited you last year.
And now you're not going. So anyway, I know you did. It's just, there was something else going on or something. Anyway, it's on my bucket list. So tell us your take on Baja. And then after we do all that, we always ask everybody that has been to Baja to tell us a crazy Baja story, but we'll save that for later.
Oh yeah. We definitely got to include in the podcast, some Baja stories. And I, you know, we could have like probably a whole seminar on Baja stories between me and Eric, no problem.
So first off, I had known Doug for a while from, you know, being ground shaker and all that. I don't know that I'd ever met Steven before this, but we were in Baja, and we had Damon Bush start for us. He rode the first 80 miles and then he was going to get on again later. Well, he had burned the brakes up in the first 80 miles. They were gone. And we're not planning on that. So our brakes were on the other side of the mountains, on the other side of the peninsula. And so we put a post out to see if anybody had some brakes. And lo and behold, Steven responds, or his dad did, and was like, hey, we got some brakes for you. Nice. You know, meet up with us. So that was my first time meeting Steven, actually, was in Baja.
I remember that. It was on the coast side, and it was somewhere around San Quentin. Yes, yeah, yeah, San Quentin area. Yeah,
where was it?
San Quentin. Yeah, or Vicente Guerrero, somewhere over there on the coast side. And yeah, I remember it was. I think that was the wasn't the 500, Eric?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah,
I can't remember. It was one of those, but yeah, Baja. Holy smoke! Like that is just a whole different style of racing, something I've never done. And
so, when was the first year you went to Baja? How long has it been? Recent or
I'm a newbie. Yeah, it really can, you know, I've done I think 9 or 10 races down there now. So you know, I know the towns. I know kind of the general gist of how to pre-run and be smart down there. But you know, my first race was 2017, and so I went down there. My very first race was a point to point, the Baja 1000, and I got hooked up with some friends up here. Dennis was on a team. Dennis Bellingeri, he was on a team, and he went down. He did a few races before me. He went down and he came back. And he's like, "You got to do this. It's like, it is so much fun. It's like nothing you've ever done. Like, you know, yes, best in the desert, the team racing." He goes, it's there's something about being down in Mexico. You got to go try it out. And, so they said, "Hey, we need a rider for the 1000. It was on the over 30 pro team. And I said, you know, why not? Let's go do it. And, I tell you what, it's, you know, so growing up being a racer, a dirt bike racer, it's a very individualized sport. I mean, it's you. Yes, you have your pit crew, you have your club, you know, you kind of your tight circle of people. But when you're out there racing, it's you against, you know, it could be your best friend, but it's, you know, they're everyone's competitors. And it's a very individual type of sport. You know, I've raced, like I said, some best in the desert races through the years. And some of those have been team races, you know, especially over the years, they've kind of morphed how they've done their races and had it more of a team style. But really down there, I really got more fully, embraced with the whole team type of atmosphere, team type of racing. And I really enjoyed it. I still love the individual racing. That'll never go away. But the team racing is really fun. And it really just kind of puts a whole different twist on how we dirt bikers race. You know, you go from, you know, someone you race tightly competitively against to someone that's on your team and you're rooting them on. Because you as a team want to do well, and it's not just you you're thinking about, it's everyone. So if you go out there and hang it out and break the bike, well, it's not just you that's not finishing, your entire team. I mean, you might have a person on the team that's been down there pre-running for a week and a half, and you break the bike up in the northern part of Mexico, and they don't even get a chance to get on the bike and race. So, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that. And, you know, so that first race I went and did down there, I mean, what an experience. I had so much fun. You know, we can go into the crazy stories later when you guys are ready, but I have a few that I definitely can share with that. But, you know, it was certainly even on race day, it was just, you know, one thing after another. You know, we ended up finishing. We had too many bad things go along the way to win our class. But we had a heck of a day. We finished, and it was the best experience. And so, you know, from there, from 2017 on, I've been down racing, you know, at least one of the four or all the four of the races of that series that they have down there for score.
That's awesome.
And you're still on the same team, same guys, or have you been changing teams?
I've changed around a little bit. So I went down there first, was on a team with Dennis, and this guy named Chad. He was our team owner, and we were racing the over 30 pro team on a KTM 500. We raced a KTM 450 on a Husky 501. You know, myself, Dennis, we had Jason Truby on there. We had some really good riders on the team, and I believe we won an over 40 pro championship, and we won a few over 30 pro races on that team. And, you know, just like a lot of things down there, just kind of teams go their separate ways. And, you know, so the team owner decided he wanted to go off and do other things, and, you know, completely understandable. And we're still friends with everybody on the team. And so at that point, I'm like, well, you know, we'll just kind of see what happens. And then in 2019, I got approached by another team. It's the Team 308, Team 408X bike down there for the Baja series. And that's a team owned by Justin Schultz, Greg Bardonet, I think is how you say his last name.
Yeah.
And Ryan Leibelt. They were kind of the three main guys behind these team. And we knew them because we were racing against them when I was on my previous team. So we were always battling, knew each other very well, but we're competitors. And so the team before mine was starting to dissolve. Jason Truby actually put my name in there and said, hey, this guy, Steve. They're like, oh, yeah, we know Steve. We raced against him a bunch and said, well, hey, you know, if you guys looking for somebody, he might be interested. And so we hooked up and we were all set to race 2020. And we all know what happened in 2020. Yeah. The world stopped. And right. So we didn't get a chance to race in 2020. It was kind of a bummer. But I tell you what, it was already off to a good start. Like, you know, that team was just, I mean, gelled so well with them. Like, they were a team where, you know, they were serious. Like, they want to go out there and win, but they also realized that, hey, we're doing this for fun. So just the perfect balance of being with racers that were serious, that were prepared, that were organized, but also realized, you know, hey, we gotta go to work, you know, we get back from racing. So let's just go out and enjoy ourselves. And so, you know, I got a chance to meet these guys. I'm like, I'm going to phone these guys. You know, they're, you know, not from Reno. A lot of them were Southern California. Jason's from Southern Nevada. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like people I went and rode with every day, but just really enjoyed their time and their camaraderie and just their, you know, everything they did to support our team. So we were all set to compete with the over 30 and over 40 pro team in 2020. They ended up only doing one race that year, Score. We decided as a team not to go down and race in 2020. We did a couple best in the desert races just to kind of, you know, get used to their bike. You know, I've been on KTMs since, you know, as far as long as I can remember. And so they're diehard Yamaha guys. And so, you know, they're like, hey, let's come down and race a couple races in best in the desert. You can get used to the Yamaha. So we went down and raced that year, Vegas to Reno. We raced Silver State. And, you know, we NC were like, okay, this is good. We got a good team here.
Cool.
So 21 came around and things were starting to look a little bit more normal. And, we said, we're going to go down and we're going to do the series, the Score series for 21. And, they put together an over 30 pro team and an over 40 pro team. Those guys are just, they have just a repertoire of sponsors that support the team.
That's awesome.
It's great, you know, and they're, we have a, you know, like I said, a pretty big list of people that support the team. But it, you know, some notables, Baja Bound Insurance, that's co-owned with Jeff Hill. We have Baja Jerky, Leibelt Incorporated. You know, those are just to name a few people that really stand by the team and make sure that we're funded and to go out there and race. But not only are they sponsors financially speaking, but I mean, they really do it because they love the sport. I mean, you know, Jeff, who owns Baja Bound Insurance, I mean, he's out there pitting us. I mean, one race I went down, it was the Baja 400. We were kind of in a pinch. I wasn't planning to race. And I think it was Ryan called me. I was like, hey, can you come down? I'm like, I'll be down. So, you know, Jeff picked me up at the airport and we drove down together and I one day to pre-run. And, you know, he went in and got me to where I needed to be to and from. And I mean, it's just like a guy like that, you know, is out there, you know, helping pay the bills and just out there having fun and supporting us. Was just like, it was just something else.
It's like we're a bunch of kids helping each other out.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you what, the support down there, I mean, even just aside from your sponsors, it's just like no other. Like, people realize when you're down in Mexico, it is different. You know, it's fun. The people, the food, everything is great, but it's, you know, it's different. I mean, you're down sometimes in the middle of nowhere with no help, no cell phone service, and things can go bad really, really fast, as Eric knows well. And so you just got to be on your game the entire time. And when you need someone, see someone that needs help, you know, you're there. And, you know, I think that's a, you know, testament to, you know, being a little older. You kind of, you know, you've just been through some stuff and you kind of, you think about that stuff a little bit more.
Right.
And, you know, so, you know, just back to our team though, it was a really solid year. We ended up winning the 30 pro and the 40 pro championship for that year. Our 40 pro class, we won every single race back in 21. It's just awesome year, awesome team. Yeah. And we're still planning to go down for this year and do some racing again. So I can't wait to be back down with those guys.
Nice. Well, let's take a little break, Eric and Steven, Steve. we'll come back and we'll hear some crazy Baja stories and maybe wrap it up or hear some other stories.
Sounds all right.
Yeah. All right. Be right back. All right. Thanks. We're back. Are you there, Eric?
Yeah, I got you. What's up, man? How's it going?
Good. We were just taking a break, getting refreshed, talking a little life stories with Steven here. So he was just telling us that, I guess, right before the Baja 1000 this last time, he had a little accident. And he wants to tell us about that.
Yeah, it was one of those, like, it's not a story of, like, oh, a spectacular crash or a really cool story. It's, like, most, you know, a lot of our injuries as dirt bike racers, it's usually, like, the smallest accidents lead to, the biggest consequences. And so, you know, I mentioned this last year we were just having an epic series championship for our team. And I was able to make it every single race. That, you know, I hit the San Felipe 250, the 500, the 400, then the last of, you know, the biggest one, the 1000. And, you know, this last year was point to point from Ensenada down to La Paz. And I was all set. I was ready to go. You know, the bike was ready for pre-running. I was ready. You know, it was just one more week. And
there?
Yeah, I gotcha.
Okay. I was having a call come in. All right.
Yeah, so my son and I told him let's go out and get a little ride in. So because he had a race the next weekend, and I was literally, like, after his race was loading up, and me and Chase with me we're gonna head down to Ensenada and get our pre-run going. And we went out for just a quick ride, you know, a quick area called the Moon Rocks out in Reno, just to go make sure the bikes were good. Really nothing more than that. We're putting around second, third gear, and I hit a little just little dirt jump that I've done a million times. And as soon as I was in the air, I looked down and realized that where I would typically land, there was a new rain rut that had formed from a storm we had just a few weeks ago. And I saw it, and it was, you know, that moment of, like, shoot, I don't have much of a choice here. I just got to hit it. And I'm like, well, it's, you know, I'll be fine. It's not like I'm really high in the air or going really fast. I'll hit it. It'll probably just hurt a little bit, but all's good. And I hit it just right. And I ended up breaking my wrist, my left wrist. And I didn't even wreck the bike. I was still on the bike, and I stopped, and my son was behind me, and he just looked at me and goes, well, what's wrong? Like, what'd you stop for? And I'm like, I just broke my wrist. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, we got to get back to the truck. So my wrist was all deformed and dislocated. And, you know, the shock set in, and, you know, it didn't quite hurt yet, but it definitely hurt. You know, I'm sitting there trying to, you know, get that thing back in place. And that was quickly realized that wasn't going to happen. So, you know, thanks to Electric Start, was able to get the bike going and force it into first gear and rode back to my truck. And luckily I had a couple friends there that were just about getting ready to go for a ride and helped me get everything loaded back up and a ride into the ER. And, you know, didn't take too much to realize that, you know, this is going to be more than just a cast. And went and saw the orthopedic. Well, back up a little bit. You know, the first call I made was let my wife know, come meet me at the ER. I got a broken wrist.
You always got to hate those calls. And,
the call you want to make.
Oh yeah, she and you know my wife. She supports me through and through. But at the same time, she doesn't have a lot of sympathy for that stuff. She's just kind of like, you know what you're getting yourself into. And she, you know, there was just a. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe you did this. And are you okay? You know, I'm like, yeah, I'm fine, but you know, it's it as soon as I did it, it just that realization, like no Baja, no 1000. And I was so upset. My second call was to Ryan Liebelt and calling to let him know I will definitely not be down for the 1000. And just again going back to what a great team those guys are. Ryan just took a deep breath. It's like, man, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. He's like, that really sucks. I'm like, I know it does. And I'm like, I'm like literally, I'm telling you, as giving you as much time as possible to let you know so we can kind of get some replacement riders built into there. And we did. It all worked out great. But I was just so sad not to make it down there. But tell you what, this, again, going back to a lame story, a lame break, but it ended up being a two surgery process to get the wrist back. And I'm still working on it, still rehabbing it. But my goal is to be back for the 500. And, I can't wait. So it was just a bum deal, but definitely wasn't one of those like, okay, this is I got to rethink. It's like, I could have probably done this, hanging out Christmas lights and stepped off the ladder wrong. It's just a freak deal. And, it's just one of those that you got to recognize that stuff happens. Time to move on.
So have you been back on a bike yet, or are you still healing?
I'm still healing. I bought a new 450 and I took it out one day. It's still when I had all my hardware in my arm. So I knew that, well, my arm's fused, but I got all this hardware in there, so I probably can't hurt it. Probably wasn't the best idea. I took the kids out riding and I was like, well, I'll just go putt around and I just got a new bike. I'm like, I got to make sure the thing works good. Right. So
hang on. The real question is, did you get a Yamaha or a KTM?
Neither. I actually, well, it's sort of, it's a KTM. Like I bought a gas 450.
Okay. So, a red KTM.
Yes. I bought a red KTM. I tell you what, if I would have called up the guys and let them know about a Yamaha, they'd say you're full of shit. But they have a lot of fun giving me crap about my KTMs or whatever. If it's not a Yamaha, they're just diehard blue.
Yeah.
So I love the Yamaha. That thing is set up so sweet. And another sponsor I forgot to thank is TBT. He sets up our suspension, Travis and Gil Greaves, and thing works great. My first time on their bike was the Best in the Desert Silver State 300. I literally, the first time I got on the bike was at my section. The rider got off and they said, here you go, get on the bike. And I was like, all right, let's do this. And I forget what place I got the bike, and it was like in third or fourth place, and I got on it and brought the bike in first place with like a 15 minute lead on the next guy in our class. So I'm like, all right, this bike works good. I like it. Felt really comfortable, but Ryan's our main guy that builds bikes, and just, he does such a good job making them work right. And TBT, they do a great job making it sure it handles great. So I love it, but you know what? I still love my KTMs. I can't get away from them.
Yeah.
Eric's a KTM guy now, was a Honda. And I'm a Yamaha.
Yeah, it's kind of pick your color though. Really at this point, they're all good.
They're all so good.
They're all good. They're just little subtle things that, I mean, honestly, it's like those guys, they've got a pretty, a good, sleet of Yamahas. But I mean, that's part of the reason that they stick with Yamahas, because they got the bikes, they got the parts. Kind of the same reason I stick with my KTMs. I love the KTM. I love the way it handles. I love the way it runs. But also the same thing is like, if I switch brands, I'm kind of starting all over with all the spare parts that, you got kind of stuffed away in the garage.
Right. Yeah.
Like they're all kind of built for that kind of brand. So it's
tools.
Kind of, You just know like, okay, when I change the oil, I got to do this. Or if I, the daily things, the weekly things, you kind of know it. So, really all of us, I think, you ride long enough, you can get on pretty much any bike and feel comfortable if it's set up correctly. But really in the day, it's just, what do you like? What do you feel comfortable on? I don't think you're going to be unhappy with any of them at the end of the day.
As long as you're on a dirt bike.
As long as you're on a dirt bike, you're going to be happy. Yes, exactly.
Well, Steven, your dad called me after you broke your wrist and he says, hey man, we're not going to be in Baja. Cause he had just texted me. He says, hey, with whatever you need, no, we're down there. I says, yeah, same to you guys. And
anyway, yeah, he called me and I was, or texted me or whatever, messaged me and says, you had gotten injured. And anyway, I was pretty gutted for you, dude. I was bummed that you weren't going to make it, but man, that stuff happens so quick. And
the only reason Doug called you, Eric, is to tell you to take your own brake pads this time.
you're probably right, but
knowing Doug,
man, Doug's just, you know, he's just one of the best humans. He's such a cool dude and just so genuine and good. But yeah, no, we bring extra brake pads now, corn dog. it's a learning process down there, man.
It's constantly company. Every time you go down, you learn something new. Like, all right, I'm ready this time. Like, oh, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, on that note, going down there, tell us a crazy Baja story.
So yeah, I think anyone that's went down a race Baja, you're gonna have a story of, you know, people are just gonna look at you like, how the hell that happened? Like, how did you get yourself in that predicament? And you know, I think I honestly, looking back, you know, it's not like, you know, my years of being down there, I mean, it hasn't been like forever. Like, you know, some people, like some of the guys on my team, you know, we had Esposito who raced with us last year, and that guy, man, he's just like, I mean, the king of Baja. You know, those guys have been going forever. But you know, neither here nor there, I've been down enough that I have my stories. And I think my craziest story was my very first day down there pre-running. I went down there as prepared as I thought. You know, I listened to people. You know, I think you mentioned talking with Dave Pearson about you know, Baja stories and the crazy stories he's had. And I got a chance to talk to Dave just a few months before I went down for my very first time. And I'm like, you know, you have any advice? And he's like, yep, just when you go down there, you're going to pre-run at 60% and race at 80%. Don't go any faster than that, because you're gonna wind up on your head. He's like, it's just, and he told me a couple stories, and I'm like, okay. So, you know, I listened to that, and, you know, my time down there was actually went fairly good. But first day, though, which is, I tell you what, like, I couldn't have asked for more bad luck, aside from just the fact that I didn't get hurt. But, you know, we go down there, and I had a 200-mile stint from San Felipe down to the Bay of L.A., and we took off. I did bring a guy down with me to pre-run. So, you know, at least was down there with someone that had a little bit of familiarity with the area. You know, I had all the things in my tool pack that I thought I needed. You know, a bike that was fresh and set up, ready to go. I had bib mousses, so I didn't have to worry about flats. I'm like, you know, I'm good. What can go wrong? I had my dad down there chasing us. I'm like, we're set. We're solid. It's going to be a flawless week of pre-running. And for the most part, we made it down to the Bay of L.A., pretty much uneventful, no issues. But man, it took a long time to get down. I mean, 200 miles is not, I mean, it's a long ways, but not like incredibly long, but I mean, it was a full day. And I'm like, okay, we're down in the Bay of LA. We still got to get all the way back up to San Felipe, and we're starting to see some long shadows here. I'm like, we better get going. So we take off, and we're luckily, a lot of it was, you know, you could take dirt, you know, paved roads, gravel roads. So I didn't have to take as much course on the way back. But of course, we get probably, you know, 25 miles outside of Bay of LA, and my bike just quits. And we didn't know if it was the fuel pump, if it was the injector. It was dead. It was not starting, and no cell phone service. And it was just us two. At this point, you know, the sun's getting pretty low, and we're like, oh my God, what do we do? We had my dad waiting for us at a certain spot with, of course, no cell phone service. And all we told him was like, stay here, don't move. We'll meet you here no matter what. So I'm just thinking to myself, like, what the hell is my dad probably thinking about now, going, okay, you guys should be here about now. And we were like at least probably, you know, 80 miles away from wow. San Felipe. So we ended up, my pre-run rider, he towed me up to a corner, one of the paved corner crossings up there where the two highways met. And we just kind of hung out there. And that's where I really found out the kind of camaraderie that you know you get racing dirt bikes, but it's a whole different level down there. We're just sitting there, and you know, we had a number of people come by and stop and ask, what's wrong? What do you guys need? You guys hurt? You need anything? You need tools? You need food? And I just couldn't believe it, just how giving people were down there. Like, just literally would give you anything you needed. you know, I had a guy that gave me some tools, he's like, you got a flashlight? I'm like, no, I don't have a flashlight. He's like, oh, you know, Baja 101, man, you always carry a flashlight. And he's like, here, and he gave me this flashlight. And I still have it to this day. And I'm like, wow. I was like, I'll get it back. He's like, don't worry. It's like, you need this. You need it more than I do. He's like, you're going to probably need this to get back, however you do. I was like, I can't help you with that, but, you know, because we're heading this way. And then meantime, we found another guy that was, he was a truck guy or side-by-side guy. Anyway, he had a trailer, and he said, hey, where are you guys going? I'm like, we're heading to San Felipe. I said, can we get a ride? He's like, yeah, no problem. So we ended up putting my dead bike on his trailer, and he took it all the way back to us to where my dad was at. However, as you probably recognize, is that we only had one bike and two people. And so I was just about to get in their truck and head back. And in the meantime, I'm going, well, shoot, how the heck am I going to pre-run the rest of the week? I don't have a bike. About that time, one of our other teammates, I mean, we're talking, there was no scheduling. There was nothing of like, hey, we'll meet you here. But it just so happened that one of my teammates, they were in their truck and drove past us on the road. And I just kind of for a second, I'm like, how the hell did that just happen? Like, I know that guy. And so I'm waving him down. And luckily, they see us in the rearview mirror. He stops. He turns around. He's got our spare bike. So he unloads the spare bike for us. And I'm like, because they were not heading down to San Felipe. They were heading down south, and they weren't even going to be anywhere close to us. But I'm like, I need the bike. They're like, yeah, no problem. So got the bike out. My bike's in the trailer heading to San Felipe. Me and my pre-runner guy, we're riding back on the road. By this time, it's pitch dark, and we had one light. The other light got burnt out from us trying to be electricians, and we failed miserably. So we burnt out the lights. So we had one light that worked, and another one was a flashlight.
That was given to you.
Yeah, it was duct taped to my buddy's helmet. And we're going back on these roads that just was so sketchy. You could barely see. We kept losing each other. We finally got back to my dad's where he was at, and he was, you know, of course, freaking out, going, oh my God, thank God you guys are okay. I didn't know what to do. And I'm like, I'm so glad you stayed here. You know, we were supposed to meet him at like, you know, 5 p.m. or even 3 p.m. We didn't get there till probably 11 o'clock at night. You know, where it's like this time, you know, sun had been down, we're cold, we're hungry. You know, so first thing we do is we head into San Felipe and find a taco stand and have tacos.
Tacos.
And, yeah. So it was definitely an experience that first day, you know, and the rest of the week went fairly good. I think it really kind of opened my eyes to like, okay, you know, this is different down here. You know, getting, you know, breaking a bike or breaking a bone is bad enough, but doing down here, I don't want to do it. And definitely had my shares of injuries down there. You know, not, luckily nothing that I couldn't walk away from, but you know, like I just, every time I do, I just think of what, you know, Dave Pearson told me of like, ride 60% pre-run, 80% when you're racing, you know, cause you know, it's just some of my worst wrecks were either just me not paying attention, riding a little too fast, or just like not recognizing where I was at in Baja. Like some areas that you think are safe, but just, they have some hidden obstacles. They're not man-made. They're just Baja obstacles that you really have to respect the desert down there. It's just
the rain ruts down there are gnarly because of the coast and everything and the type of dirt. They'll like rain ruts will just like sneak up on you and stuff. There's just so much, but, and the remoteness of Baja, it's just like he was talking about, you know, well, yeah, these guys came by and picked them up, but you have to understand how remote it is there to really understand like how crazy it is to have these people show up in the middle of nowhere and just like offer to pick you up and stuff. But yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah. I've had so many examples where, you know, I've had bike problems, and I've had, you know, guys in, you know, multi-million trophy trucks stop and ask if I need help, you know, give me gas or oil or whatever. You know, locals, you know, I remember I had a pretty good get off in a race, and, you know, these guys were there and they came over and got me, you know, kind of reoriented, got me back on the bike and got me kind of, you know, literally duct taped back together to get to the next pit. I mean, it's really phenomenal. Just the racers and the people down there, how much they really care. They, you know, they want to, they want to be part of the excitement, but you know, they really like, they're just, it's just to them, it's like, this is just the coolest thing ever. You know, it is, it's, you know, like Eric was saying, you're out in the middle of nowhere. You truly are in the middle of nowhere. No cell phone service. There's nothing for miles, and you'll come around a corner and there's, you know, 200 people out there just cheering you on. And it's, it is neat. I mean, to be in a desert race where, I mean, you literally have spectators along the entirety of the course, is, it's like nothing else. It's really, really neat experience.
I'll get there one day.
So between me and Eric, yeah, there's no excuses. You gotta get down there with us. So
I'll ride with Doug.
You can ride with Doug. Yes. We always need another chase car driver. So that's a must.
Oh, nice. Well, when do you think you'll be back on the bike? How's the process of your arm?
You know, it's feeling better. You know, my physician, you know, I think he did a really good job on it. He told me, he's like, you got to be patient with this. He's like, don't look at this in weeks. Look at it in months. You know, you got a ways ahead of you. So I, you know, when he first told me that, I was just banged up and it hurt. And I just like, hey, whatever you need, I just want to get the surgery. I want to get back to, you know, just feeling better. And, you know, now I'm, you know, feeling better. I got all the hardware out. I can move my wrists, but I still have a ways to go. Just getting the range back, the strength back. You know, it's one of those joints that just have a lot of articulations in there, but not a lot of space. It takes the body a long time to fully get that mobility back. So I, you know, I'm really hoping, I've been working this thing out like crazy. I'm hoping that by May, can be back on the bike and kind of getting a feel, and then, you know, be ready to hopefully get down there for the 500 by the end of May, first part of June.
Very cool.
So it seems like a long ways away, but you know, this year is just flying by. So
time is flying.
Yeah, it'll be here before I know it. So, but you know, it's like you just got to kind of keep those goals in mind of like, okay, here's what I need to be at. So here's what I got to do to get there.
Right.
You know? So
right.
And I, you know, it might be a little premature, but at the same time, it's like, you know, if you tell yourself, well, I got till August, you know, it's just, it just could take that much longer to get up there. So I think, you know, kind of have that kind of that sight in mind of when you need to be back is, you know, going to be, I think, a big help.
Wow. Very cool. Well, you have a son that races. You have a son and a daughter.
Yep.
Are they both racing or just your son?
Both race. I mentioned earlier that my wife, she was a gymnast growing up and went to Minnesota for gymnastics. And so both kids have gone, you know, the routes of their parents. So both of them race dirt bikes and both of them do gymnastics, and they're both really, really good at both. My daughter, she's a pretty avid dirt biker, as well as my son. And my son, my daughter, she likes racing dirt bikes, but she is more of just, I want to go out there and ride. I don't really care if I win. I just want to go out there and have fun. And as a dad, you know, you can't ask for anything more. It's like, hey, did you have a good time? Yes. That's great. Like that's a great day. My son, he's a little bit more competitive, I would say. You know, he wants to go out there and win. You know, he really wants and dice it up with the kids. And it's cool. He's doing really good, but he's also he's got that perfect body to be a really awesome gymnast. He's small, but just really strong and muscular.
I watch his videos you guys post, and it's amazing what, as a young kid, what he can do.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, he's just like, he's so, it's just, I'm not going to say it comes natural to him, because like, he works his butt off. He's in the gym, you know, Monday through Friday, you know, for anywhere from 3 to 5 hours a day after school. You know, I drop him off at school at, you know, 7:45, and he doesn't get home till 6:30 at night, you know, every single night. So he's just a really dedicated kid. He just really loves it, and it's paying off. You know, he made a all-star regional team for the state of Nevada for this year. So in a couple of weeks, we're going to head down to Phoenix for his regional competition. So I'm so proud of both of them, but I'm really, really proud of like what he's done, just, you know, in the gym on the dirt bike, and they both love it. You know, it's just something that you always wanted to do, because it's something that, you know, we enjoy doing, either myself or just as the family. So you hope that they want to do it kind of selfishly, that they're going to enjoy it. And they really do. I mean, it's a lot of times you know, they're like, hey, you know, Dad, when's the next race? We're going to go. We're going to camp out. And, you know, just from that to racing, going to the races, to riding, you know, it's just, it's, I love that part. You know, I love being able to see them grow up and get better and better on the dirt bikes.
And what a great place to raise your kids is around the dirt bikers and the desert dirt racers and stuff. I know I did with my kids and nephew, and phenomenal.
Yeah, it's great. You know, it's kind of grown up. I had the same thing, you know, just, you know, as mentioned, like, you know, we moved out in the middle of nowhere in Vegas, and, you know, it just, you find friends that have similar passions, and it's just like, you have like these bonds, these friendships with these people, you know, forever, you know, people that, you know, you can not talk to for months or years and just kind of call them out of the blue. And, you know, they're still some of your best friends. So, I've really enjoyed that. And I enjoy seeing, you know, kind of the next generation of either it's your kids or friends of your kids mm-hmm. out there doing what you love to do and what they love to do. And it's good. It's, you know, we are just seeing such a growth in the younger generation, you know, the women. I mean, it's really cool to see like this younger generation and just really people understanding like how much fun you can have
right.
on dirt bikes. You know, we're seeing almost equal numbers of the youngsters as we are with the adults. So I, you know, I think the future is bright for our sport, and we just got to keep people realizing, you know, what, you know, the positives of racing is.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, sure. What's that, Eric?
I just said, yeah, for sure. With, you know, getting the kids involved and stuff. It's,
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's definitely a lot of fun.
Very. We have a sickness. And we're teaching our kids to have a sickness. Yes.
It's okay to be addicted to it.
Yeah. So, well, what's on your bucket list? Give us a couple things that's on your bucket list that you still have ready to do, or do you even have anything goal set?
You know, at this point, you know, I want to keep getting down to Baja, and you know, I want to keep racing as long as I can. You know, I've been fortunate enough to really do a lot of cool races, anywhere from, you know, the local races, the Best in the Desert, Score, you know, other races like the Virginia City Grand Prix, and
another bucket list.
You know, that's a really just a super fun race. I got to do it this last year and had a, you know, really good race, and it was like, you know, just 2 weeks before I broke my wrist, so I was so glad I got out there. And, you know, went from like just on a high to a kind of a low. So I was yin and yang with the emotions. But, you know, really at this point, I want to be able to continue to race and continue racing at as high of a level as I can. Because you know, while I enjoy just the aspect of being out on my dirt bike, I really enjoy racing. Like, to me, racing, there's just that adrenaline you get. Mm-hmm. It's like nothing else. Like, you can get it going out riding, of course, and it's a great way to, you know, just get out with your friends, a good way to stay in shape. But something about racing, I love it. And, you know, I don't say I really have any particular races that I really want to go to or do, but really just continue on the path I am on, either from my individual racing to my team racing with my Baja team, just to go down there and just, you know, really be the best teammate for them, you know, be there just to, you know, to support them and be, you know, a pivotal racer on the team to make sure we're successful. That's really something I'm continuing to looking forward to doing.
Heck yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Huh. Eric, do you have any more questions for Steve?
No, not really. Just, you know, hopefully we can both make it back down to Mexico soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. I know we'll both be back down there. You know, just kind of, you get drawn to it. You know, it's like you can take a little bit of a break from it for whatever reasons, but, you know, you eventually get back down there. You know, it's, you know, I know Eric's had his fair share of just, you know, trials and tribulations, and myself, or just friends that have been down there that, you know, have had just some close calls, and, you know, you think, all right, you know, maybe it's time to hang it up, you know, and it's like a couple months later, they're like, all right, you know, I'm getting the team together and we're ready to go. And it's just like, you know, what can you say? It's like, well, I'd be a hypocrite to say like, well, that's dumb. What are you thinking? You know, so, so it's cool to see, you know, just, you know, and it's not just, Baja, it's just, you know, all the racing formats of, you know, just really drawing you back in to get down there and do what we love to do.
That's it.
Very cool. Well, do you have anything else that we haven't talked about that you want to throw in or anything?
No, I mean, this is, at first, I just want to thank you guys for, you know, having me on. Like, this is really cool to just to talk about kind of a lifetime of racing. Like, it's a lot of fun just kind of reminiscing about anywhere from my brother to my dad, friends to different race teams, and, you know, talking about all the sponsors that have helped me along the way, you know, Reno Motorsports. You know, I know you had Nate Delaney on earlier, from owner of DDC. He's just been, you know, again, another guy that's just so giving to the sport. We have a guy here in the Reno Sparks area. His name is Thomas. He owns a Chick-fil-A in Sparks, Nevada, and he's been just a really good guy and really helped us out in our sport. You know, our Baja team and all the sponsors there, Baja Bam, Baja Jerky, TBT, Live Belt Incorporated, just all those guys. It's just like such a really cool thing to be part of. And I can't thank them enough. And, you know, I got to definitely big thanks to my family for getting me into the sport and just supporting me along the way to do what I love to do, what my kids love to do. You know, it's one of those things that you know, you look back and go, man, like I couldn't imagine doing anything different. You know?
Yeah.
And then you kind of look forward to like, okay, what's the next thing, you know, what's the next thing you get on the bucket list, or just what's the next race. You know, keep striving for that.
Yeah. Hey, it's funny too. I had a guy last week tell me that you need to get off that dirt bike. You're getting too old. And he's an old racer too. So I don't know if he's just upset because he's not racing anymore or what, but it just, I didn't know what to say.
I had the same thing happen the other night. Older guy says, hey, you know, aren't you getting a little bit old to keep riding those dirt bikes? And you need to think about quitting racing, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know what? So that is the one thing that I absolutely, absolutely just love. And I said, when it's time, I'll know when the time is. But I said, until then, I'll be racing.
Right, right. Yeah. It will be like Doug Tischner. We'll still be out there marking course and we'll still be doing checkpoints.
Yes.
You know, we may not be racing or riding so much, but we'll still be active. At least I hope.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with you, Eric. That's a good way to put it. You'll know when you're not having fun, you know, it's probably time to.
Yeah, when it's time, you'll know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, but as frustrating as it can be sometimes getting for a race, you're trying to work around work schedules and.
Oh, it's a ton of work. Yeah.
Oh, my God. But, you know, you get down there and you're like, all right, I am so glad I'm down here. And then, you know, getting into a race and driving home from the race, it's just like the best feeling in the world. And so.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it's I think that's the answer, is like when it's no longer fun, despite, you know, just the challenges to get to a race and to do a race, you know, when that becomes so laborious that you dread it. Well, you know, it's, yeah, look at something else to do. There's plenty of stuff in the world to, you know, keep life fun. But, you know, this is definitely one of those things that I do enjoy. And it's just great that it continues to be fun with just doing different types of racing or doing it with my kids. You know, it's just, everything is always, just, you know, it's something new, something different. And I really enjoy that about the sport.
Heck yeah.
Well, and a lot of times I think they look at it from like safety standpoint, you know, well, you know, you got a family and this and that. And it's like, well, yeah, but you know, we know the risks, and we also, I'm at a stage, and we're kind of all at a stage now where we kind of calculate those risks going into it. And,
yep.
You know, we every once in a while we take some chances, but for the most part, things are calculated and we're.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I climb a ladder at work. People fall off the ladders every day. People fall off a roof. I'm on roofs at work. You know, it's when it's in your cards, it's in your cards.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes we just can't control it.
now. At least on the dirt bike, we have the little bit of like experience of like what we're doing. I spend more time I do on a dirt bike than I do going up and down a ladder. And yeah,
exactly.
True. Just some of these things you do that are like, oh, I'll just, you know, jump over this little crevice, or I'll go do this little thing that doesn't seem like a big deal. And next thing you know, it's like, all right, well, I shouldn't have done that. That wasn't a very smart thing, because right. I didn't know what I was doing. So no, I think, yeah, it's a risky thing, but you like you said, Eric, it's a calculated risk, and you just got to kind of be mindful of that. And that's one of the benefits, I think, of being a little bit older and more experienced, is you've been through stuff, and you kind of have a better idea of like, you know, how best to go about that.
You think about it different.
Yeah. Right. You got to respect it.
And you got to respect it. Absolutely. 100%.
Nice. Well, Stephen, we appreciate you coming on the show. And of course we're always changing things up again. I'm up here, like I said, for work, and we're sitting in my motel room. We actually haven't had a guest in person in a while. And now we got Eric on the phone because he's back home in his studio.
Just making it work, huh?
Yeah. So yeah. It's kind of cool to sit across from somebody and interview and do the show. It's you know, we talked about getting together and having dinner or something anyway. And then I talked to Eric. I said, hey, should I ask Stephen to be on the podcast? And Eric was for it right away. So that's when I hit you up.
I'm so glad you guys thought of it. I was like, as soon as you said it, Dave, I'm like, oh, yeah, I would love it. Like,
that'd be cool.
And you're like, wait, and I was like, let's do it tomorrow. I'm like, oh, yeah, what? You know, it's kind of like, why not? I mean, it's a little, let's talk. So it
canceled his mother-in-law's birthday party.
She still loves me. she did say, she's like, well, as long as I get to listen to it. I'm like, well, of course you do.
So, well, you better give her a shout out.
Yeah, so I got to give a shout out to my mother-in-law. It was her birthday, and we did get to celebrate a little bit before meeting up with you guys to talk, so. No, it like I said, it's just a cool family deal, you know, just how fun it is. Everyone supports it. It's like, yeah, I just really thankful.
Very cool.
Well, thanks for coming on, buddy. We really appreciate you, and it's good chatting with you.
Yeah, you too, Eric. Thanks so much. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so it's been a little long, so let's call it a show. We'll just end it here.
All right, guys, we'll see you, and hopefully we'll see you in Mexico soon.
All right, buddy. Sounds good, Eric. Thanks so much. Have a good night.
See you at the races.
All right. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Desert Dirt Biker Podcast. Make sure you tune in next time.